I know a number of the people here like to take cruises. Paul's going to take a boat ride, but it's not exactly the same thing. He's going to be a prisoner. This ship has cargo he's going to be riding on. He's going to be with some soldiers, sailors, and other prisoners. And he's going to go through a severe storm. All of it in the providence of God so that he can preach the gospel in Rome. So that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. If you look at the end of chapter 26, Paul had appeared before Agrippa. And Agrippa knew he was innocent and said, this man might have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. But this was part of God's plan that he might be able to preach the gospel in Rome. And so in chapter 27, 1, all the way through chapter 28, 16, we have the voyage to Rome. And that's what we'll be looking at in our study tonight. All right, chapter 27, 1, when it was decided that we should sail for Italy, they proceeded to deliver Paul and some other prisoners. The word other is there are two different words for other in the New Testament. And one of them means another of a different kind. In other words, Paul was a different kind of prisoner. And certain others, the King James, New King James says certain prisoners, they were different kind of prisoners than the other prisoners that were being delivered. So deliver Paul and certain prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius. Now, the question is, when did this voyage begin? This voyage began in the middle or early summer of A.D. 60. And first of all, what importance is that anyway? We're going to see it has a bearing on when he got to Rome, chapter 28, 16. That'll tell you the years he's in Rome, and then that will tell you when he wrote four of his letters, because they were prison letters. And so we have here the middle summer or fall. How do we get that? First of all, how do we get A.D. 60? Back up to chapter 24. In verse 27, it was our third chronological anchor point in chapter 24, 27. After 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus. So that's A.D. 60. Now, we're not going to take the time to go through the time markers. I've got them written down here, but for sake of time, we're not going to mention them. But if you all take all the time markers after that, for example, 25:1. 3 days later, 25:6, not more than 8 or 10 days, etc. You take all of that together and possibly a few weeks were covered. And so why do we say middle summer or early fall? There's two reasons. In chapter 21, when he got to Jerusalem, chapter 21, verse 17, when we come to Jerusalem. You may remember that Paul, chapter 20, verse 16, was hurrying to get to Jerusalem by Pentecost. Pentecost occurred in May or June. So now he's in Jerusalem about May or June for Pentecost. Okay, then not a long time passed before he's going to be on this journey. Then, so that sets the time in one direction, no earlier than, say, middle summer, if you allow these other days that we talked about. But look at chapter 27, verse 9. He's on the voyage, and it says considerable time had passed, and the fast was already over. You may have a marginal note, the New American Standard does, that tells you the Day of Atonement, this was the Day of Atonement, and it was in September or October. In fact, I went on the web, looked at a Hebrew calendar for A.D. 60, and in A.D. 60, it gave a particular date for this, when this fast took place in September. So what that means is they left on this journey sometime after early summer and before late fall. And this is around AD 60. So we can kind of tie that down. All right, so that's going to play a part in the voyage. We're mentioning that. That time factor is going to play a part in what they encountered. All right, so embarking in a Dromedian ship, which was about to sail to the regions along the coast of Asia. You might note a marginal note again if you have the New American Standard. The west coast of the province of Asia. If you can view in your mind Asia, west coast, where like where Ephesus was, the ship was bound for the west coast. Remember, this was not a cruise ship, but these were ships that were making voyages, possibly military purposes as well as commercial purposes, and that's what Paul was traveling on. So we put out to sea accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica. We ran across Aristarchus back in chapter 19. We were introduced to him here in chapter 19, verse 29, when the riot took place after Paul had preached against Diana, the goddess there. And it says, this verse 29, the city was filled with confusion. They rushed into one accord in the theater, dragging along Gaius and Aristarchus, Paul's traveling companions from Macedonia. Now, in Macedonia, there was Philippi, there was Berea, there was Thessalonica. But we have here in our verse in 27:2, he was from Thessalonica. It's interesting when you get to chapter 20 in verse 4, you see he's traveling with Paul, where you got these men that are mentioned traveling with Paul. He has seven names in verse 4, and of course there's Paul, and then there's going to be Luke. So it'd be nine of them. And we had suggested when we went through that, that some of these may have been the agents of the churches carrying their funds, that had an agent to take their funds to the needy saints in Jerusalem. You'd remember that when Paul got to Jerusalem, he said, I came to bring alms to my nations and offerings. And that was the collection that you read about in Romans 15, 1 Corinthians 16, and 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. Again, all of this time sequence fits together when we see the chronology. And so if that was what Aristarchus was doing, he may have been carrying the funds from Thessalonica to their share and participating in this work. And then we read about this fellow Aristarchus again in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 10. Paul's in prison when he writes this letter. And in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 10, he says, Aristarchus is his fellow prisoner. And he sends greetings to the church at Colossae. So why was Aristarchus a prisoner? I don't know. But he was a fellow prisoner now with Paul. Then if you look at the Philemon letter, right before the book of Hebrews, you'll see Aristarchus mentioned again in verse 24. Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, Luke, my fellow workers. So he was a fellow prisoner and a fellow worker of Paul. Like to know more about him, but we don't. But as he begins this journey, we see he is with Paul. And you'll note something else on verse 2. You see the pronoun, we. When you got back to chapter 21, if you look at chapter 21 and verse 17, when we had come to Jerusalem, that includes Luke. Now, from the time he got there until this time, remember at least two full years had passed where he was imprisoned in Caesarea. What did Luke do during this two-plus year period? We don't know. Several writers think this is when he may have been working on compiling his letters. Some think maybe it was when he wrote the Gospel of Luke. We don't know what he was doing in that two-year period. But nevertheless, now he's rejoined the story. He rejoined Paul's company here on this journey to Rome, because you see that in verse 2 with the pronoun we. And so here we have Luke again with Paul and Aristarchus, traveling companions. And that answers the question number 3 on your lesson, on the questions for the voyage to Rome. All right. And so in verse 3, it says, the next day we put in at Sidon. All right. So this is kind of an overall view, my drawing. So you may not be able to see it all, but we're going to be looking at it some more. But you can see that we start over here, go up to Sidon. We're going to trace this a little better, go up to Myra, Cnidus, come down under the island of Crete, Fair Haven. Come over here is where the shipwreck on Malta, go up Syracuse, and on up to Rome. So that's what we did. So here's a enlargement of that area. He was in Caesarea, you remember. There he had went, and there he stood before Felix and Festus and Agrippa. And now he's going to Sidon. There's an interesting statement here at Sidon. Julius treated Paul with consideration, allowed him to go to his friends and receive care. Well, who were the friends in Sidon that he received care from? We can't be certain, but look back at Acts 11:19. Sidon was in Phoenicia. In Acts 11:19, those who were scattered because of the persecution that arose in connection with Stephen made their way to Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, speaking the word of the Lord to no one except Jews alone. And verse 21, the hand of the Lord was with them, and a large number who believed turned to the Lord. So was a church established in Phoenicia in the city of Sidon, and were these his friends, some brethren from the church there? Not, we can't be certain about that. Look at chapter 15, verse 3. But it's interesting to consider, chapter 15, verse 3, when the church at Antioch sent Paul back to Jerusalem over this controversy about the Gentiles. It says, being sent on their way by the church, they were passing through both Phoenicia and Samaria, describing in detail the conversion of the Gentiles. Describing to who? Well, obviously that would be to churches, to saints. So here we have Paul landing at Sidon in Phoenicia, and throughout this voyage, you're going to see that the Romans who were in charge treated Paul with respect and care and not like a dangerous prisoner at all. But in any case, they treated Paul with consideration, allowed him to go to his friends and receive care. You may remember when Paul wrote the Roman letter in that 16th chapter. We talked about that, I think, at least in a sermon here a while back. You look back at Romans chapter 16 at the conclusion of that letter, and he had some 27 names that he mentioned. I was talking to my son today on the phone, and we were talking about the importance of being involved in a local church. You wonder sometimes if members of local churches can name 27 of their own members by name. And Paul was naming people all over the place. There were Christians that were dear to him. And this fervent love of those who've been begotten by the Word of God, 1 Peter chapter 1, is a love we ought to cultivate. And as parents, we need to teach our children to cultivate that. It's good to have family love. It's good to have friends that you meet at school or work. But we need to cultivate that kind of love between brethren. Anyway, so here Paul is on this journey in Acts chapter 27, and he has some kind of friends that he was allowed to receive care from. All right, so let's go back to chapter 27. And then from there we put out to the sea and sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. Now, from Caesarea to Sidon was about 67 miles. And I'm not sure about from Sidon over to the next location, but we'll note some that I do have some data on. The American Standard Version says under the lee of Cyprus. Your version may say that. But don't think south of Cyprus. Under the shelter or lee of Cyprus, you can see where I've got the map drawn. On the top of, here's Cyprus, and here's the major land mass. You notice I've got them between there. So under the shelter, that is, against, to be sheltered against the strong winds. Well, how do you know it was up there and not down below? All right, continue reading. Note, when we had sailed through the sea along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia. So, Cilicia and Pamphylia are up here, see? So they sailed along the coast. That would put them between this landmass up here and Cyprus. So apparently at this time, the winds were from the south and they were being sheltered from those winds. Remember, they were in a sailing ship, and that would be a factor in their sailing. So that's the reason when you draw your map, you put it up here. By the way, I've got two or three maps that I printed out, and I sent you some via email. You'll find the maps are not always the same, and some of them are not exactly accurate on every point. So that's why you want to stay with the text. And so in my drawing of the map, I tried to follow the text. So hopefully you can see that, what we've got up there. All right, so then, verse 5, and they landed at Myra and Lycia. So here's Myra right here. And so that's where they landed next, okay? And then the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy, and he put a subordinate. So here they had to change ships. See, again, this was find whatever ships available. When Paul did these journeys and went by water, this is what he would have to do. And so when we had sailed slowly for a good many days and with difficulty had arrived off Cnidus. All right, so here's Myra where they landed and changed ships. And so then they sailed and ended up right here at Cnidus. Now, he says with difficulty. From Myra to Cnidus is about 130 miles. What's interesting, hold your finger here at 27 and go to 28:13. 28:13, we sailed around and arrived at Rhegium, and a day later a south wind sprang up. On the second day we came to Puteoli. So from Rhegium to Puteoli was 180 miles. From Myra to Cnidus, 130 miles. Took many days, 180 miles in one day. What does that tell you? The weather. They were fighting the weather. And so this, again, shows you this was a tempestuous time when they were sailing. And oftentimes they would avoid those winter months, but they wanted to make Rome with these prisoners and also the evidently the goods that they were carrying. So, in verse 7, we arrived at Cnidus. Since the wind did not permit us to go further, we sailed under the shelter of Crete. So here's the island of Crete. Now this time, they sailed under the shelter of the island of Crete. So evidently the winds were coming from the north now, sailing under the shelter of the island of Crete off Salmone. And so here's that city right there on the tip of the island, and right here is another city called Lycia. Okay, so with difficulty sailing past it, we came to a certain place called Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lycia. So here's Lycia. So they're sailing right here under the shelter of Crete, and here's Fair Havens right there. Okay, and depending on the map you have, you're going to find different ones put Phoenix over in this area somewhere, because you're going to see a little bit later they were hoping to make Phoenix that faced southwest, I believe it was, and facing southwest and northwest. That's what they were hoping to do. They never made Phoenix. But nevertheless, here they are at Fair Havens. They're fighting the wind and the weather in this large vessel. And So we came to Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lycia, when considerable time had passed, and the voyage was now dangerous, since even the fast was already over. So, September, October. Was it now in October? Maybe later? We don't know. But getting into the winter months with the bad weather, and of course that's what's going to happen, they're going to run into a severe storm. All right. So, he said, verse 10, men, I perceive that the voyage will certainly be attended with damage and great loss, not only of the cargo and of the ship, but also of our lives. Now, Paul was wrong. They did not lose their lives. One or two things, possibly. He was just wrong is one. Another is that he was talking about the possibility that they would lose their lives. Or possibly that was what would happen, but God decided to spare them. I don't know which it is. But be that as it may, that was his advice. But verse 11, the centurion was more persuaded of the pilot and the captain of the ship than what was being said by Paul, which I guess would be natural. Paul was not a sailor. He was not a captain of a ship. And so they decided to continue. Because the harbor was not suitable for wintering, that is Fair Haven, so they're here at Fair Haven. There's something about that harbor that they didn't particularly like to spend the winter there. Maybe it didn't provide all the extra curricular activities they like to engage in. You know, sailors like to do that kind of thing. Maybe that's it. I don't know what it was. But be that as it may. The majority reached the decision to put out to the sea from there if somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete facing southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. So they were going to go up here to this other harbor facing southwest and northwest, apparently a better place to try to spend the winter, and then take off again in the early year after the winter had passed and the severe storms. And when a moderate south wind came up, supposing they had gained their purpose, they weighed anchor and began sailing along Crete, close to the shore. So what I've got drawn here may not be as accurate. Probably should draw it up here close to Crete. But be that as it may. And when the ship was caught in it and could not face the wind, we gave way to it, let ourselves be driven along. So now the wind blows them south, so they can't stay close to Crete, and they're blown south, as you can see. And running under the shelter of a small island named Clauda, there's a footnote, if you got the New American Standard, that some spell that C-A-U-D-A, that's what I've got on my map, so C-A-U-D-A or C-L-A-U-D-A. Clauda, here's this little island, and he says the wind caught them, and they sailed under the shelter, so this wind is bearing down upon them, and they go under this island to get some kind of protection. So you're on this boat, you're at the mercy of the pilot, the captain, you're with a bunch of prisoners, you're in a terrible storm. And that's what Paul is experiencing now. And so, the next, verse 17, well, let me start into 16. We were scarcely able to get the ship's boat under control. And that is this other boat that they carried with them. And after they had hoisted it up, they used supporting cables that went around the ship, undergirding the ship. And fearing that they might run aground on the shallows of Syrtis, that would be, I don't have it here on this map, that's further south. They were being driven south. They let down the sea anchor and so let themselves be driven along. So they're afraid they're going to be driven into some area that will destroy the ship. Remember, these were not the metal ships like we have today. These were wooden ships that could easily be destroyed by hitting land. And so they're very concerned about that. Thus, they're trying to secure that ship. And so, verse 19, on the third day, now it seems like, note the time, seems to be from this storm, from their leaving here, and the storm when it rushed down upon them here in verse 14. Because he said the next day, well, they'd already had several days on the journey, but the next day they leave Fair Havens and they're in this storm. And then, I'll mention that, I'll show you something in a moment. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. And since neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small storm was assailing us, from then on all hope of our being saved was gradually abandoned. And when they had gone a long time without food, then Paul stood up in their midst and said, "Men, You ought to have followed my advice and not to have set sail from Crete and incurred this damage and loss. And yet now I urge you to keep up your courage, for there shall be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship." Well, how does he know that? He's not a sailor. It's dangerous. They're giving up. They're jettisoning cargo. Here's the reason. Verse 23, "For this very night an angel of the Lord to whom I belong and whom I serve stood before me, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who are sailing with you.'" All these people on this ship, I don't know if any of them knew God except Aristarchus. But isn't it interesting? It's the presence of this man that affects all the lives on that ship. Isn't that interesting? You know, in the book of Proverbs, it says a nation is destroyed because of the wickedness in it. But a few people can save a nation. You remember that with the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. If they got to find 10 righteous people, God would have saved the city. Christians. God knows Christians. He knows where they're at. And often his decisions about what to do are based upon not the general populace, but Christians and plans for people. And it's interesting here, God makes this promise, you're going to go to Rome. The lives that are with you will be saved. We have a question here, question number 6 on your lesson. Paul's attitude to the Word of God is beautifully stated in this section, that's verse 25. What an attitude to have about anything God promises. What did Paul know about storms and boats and the future? Things look really, really bad. But God said no lives would be lost. Could we believe God in a circumstance like that? You know, Jesus says, "Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, all these things will be added to you." We read it and say, "Amen." But then we say, "I got to work. I got to put my job first." But wait, Jesus says, "You put me first, I'll take care of your needs." Yeah, but how's he going to do it? I don't know. He said he would. You believe him? Paul said, "It's a terrible storm. The sailors think we're going to die." No, you're going to live because the God I serve said you would. I believe God. What an attitude to have. And that's what you see here with Paul. So he said, God has granted all those who are sailing with you. And so in this particular case, it was a blessing to those guys to have this Christian on board, this man of God. "Therefore, keep up your courage, men." Now note verse 25. "I believe God that it will turn out exactly as I have been told." Boy, that's a summary of great faith right there. I don't know how or when, but if God said it, that's what's going to happen. It'll be just like God said it. Isn't that amazing? And that's the faith we ought to have right there. But we must run aground on a certain island. "When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven about the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors began to surmise that they were approaching some land." Now, the 14th night. Now, remember I said where it's dated from seems to be from this storm coming upon them, leaving Fair Havens. And it's because they had already been traveling many days when all of that took place from Caesarea. "So the 14th night had come, being driven about in the Adriatic Sea about midnight. The sailors began to surmise they're approaching some land. They took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. A little further on, they took another sounding, found it to be 15 fathoms. Fearing we might run aground somewhere on the rocks, they cast 4 anchors from the stern, back of the ship, and wished for daybreak." Marginal note says, literally, they were praying for it to become day. You remember in the story of Jonah, those sailors began to encourage Jonah to call upon his God. They were calling upon their gods. When people get in trouble, they start turning their heads upward, you know, calling on God. And so, verse 30, "The sailors were trying to escape from the ship and had let down the ship's boat." That's that boat that they had picked up so it wouldn't be torn apart in the wind. They were trying to let that boat down into the sea on the pretense of intending to lay out anchors from the bow. Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Unless these men remain in the ship, you yourselves cannot be saved." This guy's not a sailor. He's not a weatherman. What do you do? The sailor said, we're going to put this boat down cove. We're going to try to save our necks. Paul says, you can't let that happen. You want to save your own life. Well, look what happens. The soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it fall away. Paul had gained enough confidence from those fellows now that they're listening to him. Isn't that interesting? Seasoned men with a ship and a boat and the weather and storms. But they cut that boat away. Until the day was about to dawn, Paul was encouraging them to take some food, saying, today is the 14th day that you've been constantly watching and going without eating, having taken nothing. Now, I don't know if that's literally nothing. Sometimes we use the idiom about people not eating. We might say to somebody, you've eaten nothing for the last week. You mean they haven't drinking anything? They haven't eaten any broth, maybe, or anything? We mean nothing substantial. We sometimes say to people, you eat like a bird. Well, they don't really eat like a bird. They eat a little bit. And so maybe that's what he meant. I don't know. But 2 weeks not taking anything, you'd wonder how they'd have the strength to even function. But nevertheless, allow Paul the same liberties in his language that we use in ours. And I encourage you to take some food, for this is for your preservation. Here he says it again in verse 34. Not a hair from the head of any of you shall perish. One of the most comforting passages to me is when Jesus said, the very hairs of your head are numbered. Think about that. You go to bed at night. How many people are on the earth now? What's the population? 3 billion? What is it? 6 billion? Huh? 7 to 8 billion? We serve a God that knows the address of every single person. Every step, every thought, every need. Not a hair falls from your head, but what he knows it. That's the God you can pray to at night. Why wouldn't we pray to him? Why wouldn't we get up in the morning and say, God, thank you for the night past. Help me to live for you today. He said, not a hair will fall from your head. That's faith. Faith in a living God. And so, having said this, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of all. Would you do that? Bunch of men who don't, maybe not even believe in God, maybe pagans. You're going to eat in their presence. You're going to take your food and you're going to stop and give thanks. And all these things were making an impression upon these people. Paul's an example. And he broke it and began to eat. By the way, here, breaking bread had nothing to do with the Lord's Supper. You can see that was a phrase they would use of common meals. And so and all of them were encouraged, and they themselves also took food. So his example was having an impact. Here's a guy, in spite of everything, he said, take courage, fella. We're going to make this. And you see their growing confidence in this man. But there's not fully yet. So, all of us in the ship were 276 persons. 276 people affected by one or two men. Their destiny. Isn't that interesting? Maybe all of them would have died had Paul and his companion not been on that ship. And so, verse 38, when they'd eaten enough, they began to lighten the ship by throwing out the wheat to the sea. And when the day came, they could not recognize the land, but they did observe a certain bay with a beach, and they resolved to drive the ship into it if they could. Casting off the anchor, they left them in the sea, while at the same time they were loosening the ropes of the rudders. These ships had rudders, and hoisting the foresail to the wind, they were heading for the beach. So, here they are sailing in the sea. They're headed for this island right here, which you can see, I think. Melita or Malta, right here. They're headed for that island. And as they fathom, they see they're getting closer and closer. And so, where two seas met, and where the waves were meeting, they ran the vessel aground, and the prow, the front part of the ship, evidently, stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern, the back of the ship, began to be broken up by the force of the waves. There's still some terrible winds going on. Imagine this ship, 270 people on it, 276, plus all the cargo that they had. This was a pretty good sized ship, and yet the winds tearing it apart. And so, verse 42, the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, that none should swim away and escape. But the centurion, we said Paul had growing confidence and respect for him, wanting to bring Paul safely through. Why? There's something about this man and his presence and his calmness and his faith that's impressing the centurion. Kept them from their intention and commanded that those who would swim should jump overboard first and get to land. Of course, Paul was a prisoner. He'd have been killed too. And so the rest should follow, some on planks, others on various things from the ship. Thus it happened that they were all brought safely to the land. Okay, so when they had been brought safely through, then we found out the island was called Malta. And you can see in your footnote, if you have a footnote, some say or Melita. On this particular map, I've got Melita here. And the natives showed us extraordinary kindness. Note Luke with them, us, we. For because of the rain that had set in and because of the cold, they kindled a fire and received us all. You know, you say, well, that's Christian love. No, it's not Christian love. These weren't Christians. It's neighbor love. You know, when there's a storm, a hurricane, a flood, people all over the United States go and help those people. Why? Because they're Christians and they're neighbors. That's one of the second greatest commandment. And God built us that way. If we just won't deny it, love your neighbor as yourself, which means help your neighbor, assist him. And so it is a great feature that God built into mankind. And so they received us all. When Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, a viper came out because of the heat, fastened on his hand. When the natives saw that the creature hanging from his hand, they began to say to one another, undoubtedly, this man is a murderer, and though he's been saved from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live. In other words, God's punishing this guy. However, he shook the creature off in the fire and suffered no horror. They were expecting he was about to swell up and suddenly fall down dead. But after they waited a long time and seen nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and began to say he was a god. Remember what happened in Lystra? He raised the lame man. They were ready to worship him. He preaches to them about God, and the Jews come in there, and next thing you know, they're stoning him to death. People are fickle. But nevertheless, now in the neighborhood of that place, there were lands belonging to the leading man of the island named Publius, who welcomed us. Now this verse says entertained us. That means he threw a party. The idea is he gave them lodging. King James Version says lodged us. New International Version says entertained us hospitably. The English Standard Version says hosted us. And so hospitality, what a great trait to have. To open your house, open your home, open your lodging. It didn't have to just be your sister, your brother, your children, your aunt and uncle. There's people sometimes need a place to stay. And that's what happened on this particular occasion. And look who was blessed. What a privilege. They didn't know at the time they were harboring an apostle of Jesus Christ. And this shipwreck on this island brought the gospel to that island. Little old bitty island here. Were there people of honest heart there? Maybe so. You know, Jesus says, those who seek shall find. God knows honest hearts. And God used this storm to shipwreck that sea. And there's some people here, maybe with good hearts, that got the privilege to hear the gospel because of the providential events that took place. Isn't that amazing? And so, number seven. What was the purpose of the miracles on the island of Malta? Of course, it was to confirm the word that Paul was preaching, that he was an ambassador of the king. Remember Mark 16 and 20, when Jesus told the apostles that they would have these miraculous powers, he said they went out and confirmed the word by the signs that followed. Same thing in Acts 14 and 3 when Paul and Barnabas were preaching. They confirmed the word by the miracles that they did. And the Hebrew writers, that was the purpose of miracles, to confirm the word, not just to heal people, but to confirm that they were preaching God's message. And so, verse 9, the rest of the people came and were getting cured. They honored us, verse 10, many marks of respect. We were setting sail. They supplied us with all that he needed. Tell us, Luke, how many people obeyed the gospel? I don't know. He didn't tell us. He didn't tell us about Sidon, whether or not there was a church there when he mentioned it earlier in the book. There are so many things that are not recorded. But be that as it may, the Holy Spirit in his wisdom saw fit to give us the record that we have. And so, here you see on the map Syracuse, Regium, and then these other cities that we're going to look at here quickly. And as he continues his journey, so here's Melita. And then he goes to Syracuse, Regium, Puteoli, Market of Appius, three taverns, and then they get to Rome. And so you see that here in 12, they stayed there 3 days. Sailed around, arrived at Regium. A day later, the wind sprang up. Regium is actually on this peninsula here. Some maps have it over here in Sicily, but it's over here on this peninsula. That's why I say some of the maps are not accurate. And then they came to Puteoli. They found some brethren, were invited to stay with them for 7 days. How long would you keep people you didn't even know if they were saints? Did you open your home to them? Say, boy, that's uncomfortable. I have to wash the sheets and feed them food. And man, house will get all messed up. 7 days. And thus we came to Rome. When the brethren, when they heard about us, came from there as far as the Market of Appius and 3 inns to meet us. Would you go out to meet somebody? We can't even get people to go to a gospel meeting in the same town many times. Your brethren came out to meet Paul. And when they saw him, he thanked God and took courage. And so when we have a gospel preacher in, there's many of you that are volunteering to have him in your home or take him out to eat. That's a good thing to do. And so, verse 16, we entered Rome. Paul was allowed to stay by himself with the soldier who was guarding him. We have a question on your lesson number 9. In 2 Corinthians 11:25, Paul says, 3 times I was shipwrecked. Could this be one of those times? The answer is no, because 2 Corinthians is already written. And that's why when you go through the book of Acts, you see where letters were written. That helps you with those kind of questions when you study the book of Corinthians. What chapter did you mark? What chapter that identifies the location where he was when 2 Corinthians was written?
Beginning of Acts 20.
He was in Acts 20, right at the beginning of Acts 20. When he's up in Macedonia. That's right. So, that answers that question, and that's where your chronology plays a part. All right, well, we got him to Rome. And yes, ma'am.
How did you answer number 5?
How long did the voyage take? A little over 3 months, because remember, they left middle to late summer, remember? And so they spent 3 months on the island, verse 11 of chapter 28. And of course, they would wait till they could sail again, so over 3 months. And so that would put, if they left in 60, that puts them coming to Rome when? 61. He was in Rome 2 years, right? 61 to 63. There's your date for the Roman imprisonment. That's how we get it. Okay, thank you.